You're listening to The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent, and according to Retraction Watch, more than 380 research papers studying COVID-19 have been retracted so far. For example, the study that claimed COVID vaccines kill 5 times more people over 65 than they save, that was published in the journal Toxicology Reports in September of 2021, and it was not retracted until 8 months later, well after any damage had been done. You can join in by calling with your questions or comments about retracted research, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Our guest to give us a deeper look at this, Elizabeth Selzer, is an application support analyst for the Advocate Health Midwest Library at Aurora St. Luke's Medical Center in Milwaukee. And Liz, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Also joining us, Ivan Oransky is co-founder of Retraction Watch, the editor-in-chief of The Transmitter, and a distinguished journalist in residence at New York University's Arthur Carter Journalism Institute. Ivan, thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks for having me, Lee.
So every year, thousands of published academic papers are retracted due to flawed data, plagiarism, poor methods, or other errors. And Ivan, I'll start with you. What are your concerns about these retractions?
Well, my concerns are actually almost not even with the retractions. It's with all the papers that aren't being retracted that should be. But I will start by saying that about 2/3 of these retractions are for something that we would all either agree or likely agree is misconduct. So that's, as you mentioned, plagiarism. It's making up data. It's making data look better than they really are. What this says to us is that peer review, which is this idea and actually practice where peers, in other words, other experts, are supposed to review studies before they're published and sort of give them, well, according to some journals and publishers, a sort of stamp of approval, but really it's just sort of a, yeah, this passes the initial sniff test, isn't really catching all these problems. And I think we just need to be honest about that. But the bigger issue, again, is that so many papers that should be retracted, in fact, aren't being retracted. So there's a lot more problematic literature out there than even those thousands of retractions would suggest. And as a final comment, I'll just say that those thousands of retractions are still, you know, somewhere between 1 in 500 or 1 in 1,000 papers being published every year. So I think it's important to say that this is still a pretty rare event.
So, Liz Selzer, the journal Nature says we set a record last year for the number of academic research papers that had to be retracted. What are your concerns about these retractions?
Well, I think that retractions or the process of going through a retraction is showing that the science is working and the process is working. Not everything that we publish is infallible, and we can't. Sometimes it takes another set of eyes or other people looking at the research in order to determine that it was incorrect. And it's okay to be incorrect, and it's okay to correct what's been published. But like Ivan said, the length of and the process of going through a retraction takes a long time. And while these papers with their flawed data are out in the public, people are using them to influence their own research. And there's wasted time there. There's wasted money, a lot of waste.
Yeah, Liz, what does a retraction process generally look like?
So you mentioned that it took about 8 months to get the COVID article retracted, and that is actually a pretty quick timeline. For the formal retraction process to take place, there's a lot of people who need to be involved. You've got the editors and the publishers, people at the institution where the research was being conducted, and review boards. So these groups need to come together and go through the steps. So first of all, somebody might contact a journal or institution saying, I think there's a problem with this paper that's recently been published. And then that gets sent to the institution where the research was being done. And any institution that's getting federal funding from the National Institutes of Health or the federal government, other sources, they need to have in place a process to review any misconduct. So that process, through that process, they would take on the complaint and then investigate it. And the investigation process involves really doing due diligence to make sure that the complaint addresses or the complaint actually involves misconduct. And then everybody involved in the project needs to be involved and the data needs to be picked through to see where the errors might have occurred. And this process can take months to happen. You've got a lot of people involved in it, looking at the data. And then if misconduct is said to have been found, then the head of the institution can recommend that the article gets retracted. So that's months to a year at that point. And then the journal has to issue a notice of retraction saying this article was published, we're retracting it, and here are the reasons why. And then the journal needs to make sure that any copies of that article on their website are labeled as being retracted. And they also need to filter that data down to any place on the internet that might have the article, like PubMed, which is a popular database for searching for medical literature or any type of research. They need to get the update so they can update their records saying that these articles have been retracted.
And
So,
in the retraction
lengthy
process,
process.
yeah, but once they decide to retract, are journals going through this entire process? Is it easy for others to find when a study's been retracted?
So, I've done a couple research papers on this, and we've looked at the patterns and how retracted publications are being labeled, and it's really all over the board. So different journals have different ways of labeling their papers as being retracted. There's recommendations in place on what should happen, but the recommendations are pretty vague, and they're not saying like stamp all the PDFs with retraction. They're just saying label it, and how the label appears can sometimes be hard to find on some papers. So that part is a little messy.
That's Liz Seltzer from the Advocate Health Midwest Library in Milwaukee. Also joining us, Ivan Oransky, who is a co-founder of Retraction Watch. And Ivan, are we to be reassured by this increase in these research papers being retracted? Is this a cause for concern? How do you see the recent rise?
I think much, if not, in fact, all of the recent rise is due to better screening. In other words,
Okay.
people actually looking for problems, which, that's it's not great that misconduct happened or that, frankly, that errors happened. About 20% of these are due to what I think most people would agree are sort of honest errors. But I think we have to also look at the fact that there's been a dramatic rise over the past few years because of something called paper mills. Now, paper mills that, listeners might know about are making literal paper. These are sort of metaphorical paper mills, if you'd like. But what they do is they actually sell papers to authors, researchers who are under tremendous pressure. Publish or perish is a very real thing. And in many parts of the world, it's even more intense than it might be elsewhere. And so it's actually an economically good decision, believe it or not, for some authors to, or at least short-term economically good decision, for authors to buy a paper instead of doing the research themselves, or even buying authorship. I mean, people buy authorship on papers that have already been accepted. That means two people are committing misconduct: one that sold the authorship, the other one that bought the authorship. And this is all again because of publish or perish. And I think that's, if you want to pull back and look at the root causes, the thing to be concerned about is the incentive structure that researchers are laboring under, which is pretty intense. And I'm actually pretty sympathetic to how much pressure these researchers are under. So we should be actually somewhat reassured in that journals are starting to take, and universities and government agencies are starting to take this much more seriously. Adam Marcus and I co-founded Retraction Watch in 2010, so 13 and a half years ago now. And at the time, not all that many people were particularly focused on retractions or scientific misconduct. There were some, absolutely, but this was sort of an untapped set of stories, which is why we launched the thing. And now you can't, especially nowadays, as we're all talking today, we're all sort of, I think, all reading still about the Harvard case, which a couple of Harvard cases, but the Harvard president, of course, and that some, allegations of plagiarism. Stanford president stepped down, as did the Harvard one just recently. And so there's much more attention being paid, which is a good thing. But we really still need to take a look back, not just at sort of, okay, what sanctions should we have? What punishment should we have for this bad behavior? But actually, what's leading to the bad behavior? And that is honestly a much more almost existential question for academia.
I got to have an email here from Haley, ideas@WPR.org, and they want to know what happens when retracted research is cited in other research. And if a researcher publishes and cites a retracted article, does that author get notified of the retraction? So how does this influence other research? Liz, I'll ask you.
Mm-hmm. So, or articles that have been retracted can still be cited, and sometimes they're being cited because as a case that says this is a bad paper and here's the reasons why. But I think you need to look at the reason why the original article was retracted and the reasons why the person who cited it was using it. So were they using it as just a background example of prior research that's been done, or were they using the actual data from the article? And if it's the second point, I think, the citing author, it would behoove them to go back and take a look at their studies and self-correct. That, is a process. The person has to figure out that the paper they cited has been retracted. So that is...
How do they find that out?
How do they find that out?
After the fact.
There's different tools. Okay. So a lot of researchers use the citation manager to store the documents that they're finding online. And if you use a citation manager like EndNote or Zotero, it's a software where you can deposit PDFs of articles or just the basic citation information. These citation managers actually link to Retraction Watch. So every time you open them up, they kind of call out to Retraction Watch and say, has anything in my library been retracted? And if so, a big X will show up on their screen. So they can be aware of that pretty quickly as soon as Retraction Watch has that information. So then they can kind of start to take the steps to say, what data was I using? Is this integral to my paper? Do I need to issue some sort of correction or whatnot about my research?
So the tools are there and available.
Tools are there, and Ivan's Retraction Watch has made this so much easier to identify these papers. Before citation managers were doing this, it was really, one by one looking through your library and periodically checking, has this been retracted? Has it not? And that is, a
process.
People aren't likely to do that.
Right.
Yeah.
Liz Selzer, an application support analyst for the Advocate Health Midwest Library at Aurora St. Luke's Medical Center in Milwaukee. Also joining us, Ivan Oransky, co-founder of Retraction Watch, the largest database in the world of research papers that have been retracted. And you can call in with your questions or comments, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn. And when errors and bad data are found in academic papers published in scientific journals, it can take years to retract them. Meanwhile, the debunked work continues to be cited by other researchers. So what can the scientific community do to protect sound science from disproven and unsubstantiated research? That's why we have our guest with us this morning, Liz Selzer from the Advocate Health Midwest Library, and Ivan Oransky, co-founder of Retraction Watch. And Ivan, and you can join the conversation as well. Academics, 800-642-1234. Questions about how we are to understand the science and the retraction process, and how we can reaffirm the scientific method. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. I would be curious to know, Ivan, from the perspective of Retraction Watch, are retractions more common in some fields of study than others?
Lee, it's a great question, one that we get asked a lot. And the short answer is yes. But what often is lurking behind that question is sort of an assumption that that means certain fields have more problems, right? So the issue, though, is that not all fields are, frankly, taking this issue seriously. So there have been various fields over time, over the past, give or take 15 years, that have had a sort of, if you will, taking themselves to the woodshed moment. So a big scandal will happen, and often it'll get a lot of airplay, a lot of news coverage. And that field will say, wait a second, you know, if it's a mature field that's actually trying to do the right thing, it'll say, okay, we should really take a deeper look here. You know, we, if for no other reason, we don't want to be caught unawares, and hopefully even for better reasons, which is let's clean things up. Let's make sure that our work and what we publish and what we cite is as trustworthy as possible. So if you look at fields like social psychology, which had a big scandal about 12 years ago now, 12, 13 years ago now, a guy named Diedrich Stoppel, who turned out to have been making up all his data, they had that moment and then realized, okay, we have a problem. So there seemed to be more attractions in that field, but that's probably because they're looking. Same thing was with anesthesiology. It's a field that punches above their weight, so to speak, in terms of retractions. That actually is part of why we launched Retraction Watch, is that Adam Marcus, my co-founder, had broken a big story about someone doing pain management research and who, again, also was making up all of the data in his trials. And so there are a number of fields like that. Cancer biology is another one where it appears like there, and in fact, there are more attractions in those areas, but it really is because they've actually started looking. So if anything, we should trust those fields more.
Liz, one story from Retraction Watch here reported that a University of Wisconsin-Madison review committee found duplication and mislabeling in a 2017 paper published in the journal Science Signaling. But it took the editor of the journal 3 years before beginning the process of retracting that paper. What can we do to expedite, what can be done to expedite the process of retraction of these research papers?
You know, that was a very unusual case, and it's the retraction complaint seemed to have just sat on the editor's desk. So I'm not sure what the workflow is for that journal. But you know, that this is all done kind of in silos. So if others might have been aware of that complaint had been made, perhaps pressure could have been put on the journal to expedite the process. But I think for you know, reducing retracted information or getting the retracted articles through the process more quickly, if people are using, or if the data and articles are more open to reviews. So we've got the peer review process that Ivan mentioned, which is a couple of people reading an article and giving their stamp of approval on it. But say these articles are put into something like a preprint server. So before it's being published, it could be put in a preprint area labeled not as official, but it would allow people who are in the know of that area to really give it a good once over. And even better than just reading the article before it's been printed, if we make the data available. So instead of just sitting on this, you know, fraudulent data and having it just saved locally on your own computer, what if that data could be put somewhere in an open environment? So anybody who has interest in it can look at it and start either using it to build upon or noticing if there's been any errors made, and this could be corrected before an official version of the article has been published.
Liz Seltzer's from the Advocate Health Midwest Library in Milwaukee. Our other guest, Ivan Aransky, is the co-founder of Retraction Watch. And Ivan, Retraction Watch has reported on a physician formerly affiliated with the UW School of Medicine and Public Health who co-authored a paper about a hospital protocol to radically reduce deaths from COVID-19. Sounds good, but that paper ultimately had to be retracted. What are some of the consequences that researchers face when they are faced with retraction?
Yeah, you know, it's a really wide range. That particular case, I, you know, a lot of details, a lot of wonder under that bridge. I think we all know that during the pandemic, the scientific community has been, I think, in a good way, really trying to rush and to get things done. And that has led to some sloppiness, but also to some bad behavior and bad faith actors. You know, the range for retractions, it sort of depends on what happened. One of the things that's really important, and Liz referred to retraction notices, which run alongside, you know, the actual withdrawal, you know, retraction of that article. Those should be very forthright about what actually happened. And it turns out that when a retraction happens for what, again, colloquially we would say is honest error, there's no negative consequence for those researchers. And in fact, for that field. And sometimes there's even some evidence that they get a bump in sort of reputation as measured by citations and things. But more to the point, there isn't actually a drop. Whereas if there is a retraction or a series of retractions for misconduct, for fraud, a number of things can happen. One is that depending on whether or not the university, the federal government in the states or elsewhere has funded the research. There can be an investigation. A lot of people who've had a lot of attractions are no longer working in science. You can actually be sanctioned in terms of losing the ability to, you're banned from federal funding, or your federal funding has to be supervised. Those are the rare cases, though. And I've been quoted saying, and I think it's still the case, that the most likely outcome for someone who commits fraud in science is a long and productive career. And that's because so many cases are not being looked at. The incentives for universities, for agencies, for journals to look at these issues are really not there. In fact, they're quite the opposite. And so we don't have as much vigilance and sort of policing, if you will, as we should. That being said, when there's a major case, often the fact that the press reports on it can pressure the relevant people to do the right thing.
With the time we have left here, is about a minute, Ivan. Would be the one thing we could do to see journals improve how they handle retractions?
Well, I think somehow decoupling, you know, tenure, promotion, all of that stuff, and your career from publishing in certain journals or even any journal would really do a lot. In terms of the journals themselves, some of them actually are. They hire research integrity managers. They hire staffs to actually look at these issues when they come up or even before they come up. That's a good step. And some are actually screening for problems, you know, before they happen or as papers are coming in. Yep. Those are all good things, and it'd be great if more did that.
Ivan Aransky, co-founder of Retraction Watch, the editor-in-chief of The Transmitter, and a distinguished journalist in residence at New York University's Arthur Carter Journalism Institute. Thank you for joining us this morning. Also, Liz Selzer, thank you to you, application support analyst for the Advocate Health Midwest Library at Aurora St. Luke's Medical Center in Milwaukee. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you've been listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.